Welcome to Is Able, the radio show about possibility, where we look at what a person with disabilities can do rather than what they cannot do. Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and right now we are doing a series on service animals, therapy animals, and we're also going to, in the future, look at other kinds of topics that have to do with disability-related issues. We're probably going to be doing a series on ADHD, autism, with students on the autism spectrum. And one of the things that I'm really interested in right now is learning for students with special needs when you have this COVID cloud hanging over our heads. And a lot of the students that have special needs, like speech therapy, physical therapy, how do they get those kinds of services in this environment, an online environment? One of the things we're going to talk about today is, and Jenna Risdahl is here with me. We both, I don't know if we're new to the island or, you know, we haven't lived here since we were toddlers. We have lived here since we had toddlers. So I don't know if that qualifies us or not. But it is really true that spending time with a dog is really gives you a special bond. My service dog, Maya, is under the table here being very good. And today we're going to talk about therapy dogs. Jenna spends a good deal of her time, since she's been a retired educator and a psychologist. Jenna, you can tell us a little bit about your background here.
Okay.
You were with Highline, weren't you, mostly?
I was mostly with Highline School District and taught in some universities around the area in graduate courses in school counseling and therapy. So, yes, I come from a background of doing therapy with humans, and I've always had dogs, always loved dogs. And I sort of, when I retired, morphed into working with therapy dogs on a deeper level. I've had therapy dogs that I've worked with in the schools, but once I retired, I decided I wanted to train other people to work with therapy dogs. So I train teams, and I also train people to be evaluators to certify therapy dogs all around the country.
And I think that's really the key word, is certification, having dogs that have certain kinds of qualities. We'll talk about that a little bit later, about differences between therapy dogs and a dog that's called an emotional support dog or emotional support animals. So when you do certification, do you travel all over the country, don't you? All over the United States?
When I do the actual certification, that is more regional. I travel Washington, Oregon areas to actually certify teams to become therapy dog teams. When I'm training people to be evaluator of teams, then I go around the country and train people in different regions of the country. So it's two different things, but...
And how long does the training take?
So the training for a team takes, there's an online handler's course that is probably 4 or 5 hours long, or you can do that in person as well. There are people that are instructors and you can take that course, but you have to have that final completion of that course before you can go on to get an evaluation with your dog. And what is recommended, that in between those two or simultaneously, you also are working with your dog on the skill sets that you need to become a therapy dog team.
Do you use commands with the dog just like you would with a service dog?
You do. The whole first part of the evaluation is obedience, and there are 12 different exercises that have to do with obedience. So your basic skills like sit, down, stay, leave it, come, they have to be good on recall. They have to be perfect on all of those. They cannot fail any part of the obedience, because you have to have your dogs be reliable. They have to be predictable. They have to be reliable.
You know, my favorite command for Maya is that she goes potty on command. And I always thought to myself, I wish when we were traveling across country that my kids could have taken that same command, because it was always 3 miles after we left the, you know, the restroom station or something.
That right.
They wanted to know where the next one was. Is there a written component to the test as well as online or working type of?
There's a written component in that when you take the course online, there's an assessment afterwards that you have to pass. So it's not really written. It's an online assessment, and, you know, it's multiple choice. And but again, you have to pass that. And then every 2 years, you have to re-up your certification. You have to go through a knowledge check assessment for handlers, and you have to then do another evaluation with your animal. Evaluation takes about 45 minutes. I told you about the skill part where they have to be obedient. Then there's an aptitude part where you're actually working hands-on with people. And this is the most important part, because your dog has to be used to being handled all over in a variety of different ways. There may be someone who is challenged in some way and can't pet a dog unless you guide them on how to do that. So a big part of it is that you're working as a team. They have a phrase, Yayaba, you are your animal's best advocate, and you're always looking out for the benefit of your animal. So if somebody comes up and whaps your dog, you know, because they think that's how they pet a dog, then you step in and you say, you know, my dog really likes to be stroked on his back gently.
I think, you know, I think that's really important, because those are learned skills. And I think many times when I see kids, you know, really young kids with a dog, they'll pull up the fur or do things like that. And, you know, it really does need to be taught.
It really does. And it's important with kids, and they respond to it. You know, if when I've walked into a classroom with one animal and there's 25 kids in the room and they all want to converge on the animal, that's not fair to the animal. So I have either said you can come up one at a time or groups of five, what your animal can tolerate. And you get to know that as you're working, what's best for your animal.
And I think it's also important that you're having the periodic reviews, because one of my trainer, Kim Hyde, who works with the Prison Pet Partnership Program, is always getting on me to, and I appreciate it, but, you know, don't let your dog get sloppy with the commands.
Right.
Because they, you know, they unlearn those commands, or these dogs are smart enough that they're thinking ahead of you many times. So
we call it a tune-up, because I teach a class on island. It's a free class. You can bring your dogs in to learn the skill sets to be a therapy dog. And people who have working teams come in and join us, because you want to keep your dog active. You want to keep them enjoying it. I mean, if we back up for a minute and say, what makes a good therapy dog? The very first thing is your dog has to feel joy with people and be okay with other animals. But they have to have that passion for people. Dogs are like people. Some of them are introverts. They don't really care to interact with a whole lot of other people besides their owner. That would not make a good therapy dog.
Yes. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. And a team is about how many people?
Team is just the dog and the handler.
Oh, okay.
When I say a team.
I got you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's just one person, one animal. And, you know, the whole premise is that we're trying to enhance the relationship between people and animals, because it influences health in a positive way and well-being.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And we're going to talk about that in our next session. Tell me some of the types of therapy that the dogs are used for.
There's a long laundry list of things, okay. And I'm happy to talk about them because they're all important. Hospitals, hospice, schools, adult daycares, OT sessions, PT sessions, veterans hospitals, working with individuals with cognitive impairment, memory care, traumatic brain injury people, universities, prisons, airports, on the island, What I do with my two dogs is visit the schools in a reading program. And I have done work at VCC as well. And we go to the airport. So each one of them is a very unique situation and very important. I know a lot of teams that go to hospitals, children's hospitals specifically. And then there's college visits where you help with test anxiety. I've taken my dog Rain to universities all around the area, UW Law School, Seattle Pacific University during test time. And it helps with test anxiety.
I pretty much could have used the dog all the way through junior high and high school, I think, for test anxiety. And my mother was at the Vashon Care Center for a while. And, you know, a lot of times I'd come up and visit her and it would be, you know, where's Lucy? And Lucy was my service dog at that time. I don't know how many millions of dollars worth of goldfish that my mother stole from the to give to Lucy, you know.
Oh.
But that was really fun. You're right. I think there are, you know, using dogs. The one thing that when I've worked out at the prison, using dogs for therapy in the prison, it's calming. It's soothing. It's almost like meditation.
Mm-hmm.
And when the women work with the dogs, they really like to do that. And many times these are people that have been in prison that have, you know, burned all their bridges with families. And, you know, you can't fool a dog. And a dog pretty much is always happy. I mean, when they're, you know.
Unconditional love.
Yeah. Unconditional love. Yeah, if everybody treated you like when you came home, when the dog treats you, that would be pretty wonderful.
Well, you mentioned test anxiety, and I was testing a child one time for some academic skills, and I had my therapy dog Riley in the room at the time, Golden Retriever, and afterwards he told his mother, he said, just having the dog in the room was so relaxing for me. I was so nervous when I was going to have this test, and just having the dog there was amazing. So you get a lot of feedback from that. I've worked with autistic kids with dogs. I've worked with special ed kids. Some of the kids that had been nonverbal would talk to the dog. I've de-escalated situations where kids are freaking out, and I would have a teacher call me and say, can you bring the dog in? And it just immediately calms the child.
Really changes behavior.
It's amazing.
Yes. Yeah. And do you feel that dogs can read human emotions?
Well, it's interesting that you say that. I don't know about reading. They certainly feel human emotions on a different level than we feel other people's emotions. Part of it has to do with their sense of smell. I think they smell the hormones in our blood. And they actually react to that. If you're training a dog to be a diabetic service dog, they're reacting to what's in your blood and what they smell. And I think it's almost the same with emotions. If you've got a high level of cortisone? Yeah, that is a stress hormone. They can sense that. And I've had dogs that will just walk over to a person to calm them down. And yes, that person said, I was really stressed out. That dog knew that.
Yeah.
And came over to calm me. And it's amazing.
Yeah, I think that, again, in that prison setting, the dog, when they work with the dogs, and now the program is kind of shut down because of all the COVID things.
Right.
But the dog actually goes back into the dormitories or into the living facilities mm-hmm. with the inmates. And again, having those dogs at night, you know, is also very calming.
Yeah, I think there's another thing about people that are incarcerated working with dogs is they have very little control over their lives. And it's not that they want to control the dog, but they work with the dog in a certain way where if they give a command in a respectful way, the dog obeys the command and it gives them a sense of control in their lives, which is very important for all of us to have.
Yeah. And I think that it's also someone that relies on them.
Yes.
You know, what was your statement? You're animal's best
advocate.
Right. Yeah. And that really is true. One of the things too at the prison is they take primarily, now they're taking a wider variety of dogs, but they primarily for a long time, took rescue dogs.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And many times those were the dogs that were really looking to find a bond.
Right.
How you mentioned some specific situations. You mentioned with a person who is diabetic. Are there other ways that you see that that the dogs can work with individuals, that situations you've run into?
Right now, Pet Partners, the organization that I work with, has a certification for animals as crisis responders. And that's one way, you know, the comfort dogs that went into Sandy Hook and all different places that respond, that's one way that therapy dogs can work. But in the school reading programs, you see effectiveness. We aren't there to teach reading skills with the dog. We are there to teach, to help them learn to love reading and to not feel so stressed out by reading. And when they read to a dog, the dog isn't going to give them feedback and they're just going to be present with them. I had a situation where I said to a teacher, so you think this child needs to see the dog again this year, because we'd seen the child the previous year. And the teacher said, this is the best thing about school for this child. Yes, she needs the dog. She will be present every day that dog is here.
And I had a situation where I was working in a school, and this was a teacher who was really loved by the students. And the teacher got a serious health condition that he had to leave during the year. So I happened to be there with my other service dog, Ellen. And I wasn't even thinking about having, you know, Ellen is, she's a service dog, not a certified therapy dog. But the teacher was telling the kids that he wasn't going to be back the rest of the year. And this was really traumatic for the kids. And so one of the kids said, would it be okay if we pet Ellen? And I said, yes.
Oh.
And so these fourth grade kids are all kind of lined up and petting Ellen and crying. And it was just a real, real poignant situation, but it just showed me just how valuable that dog can be.
Well, you think about, you know, I visit at the airport and you think, oh, airports, you know, but the programs are really successful. There are a lot of stressed travelers, and I will have guys in suits down on the floor with this dog. And then they'll pop up and say, this is the best airport ever. Or I've had to wait 5 minutes for my flight. I've got these three kids and this is the best thing for them. And they're down on the floor with the dog. And so it works on so many different levels. But you can also work with the dog in a more professional setting. It's called animal assisted therapy, where you're actually like a PT or an OT is working with the person and you use the dog as motivation. Okay, we're going to help with walking. You're going to help by walking toward this dog or even reaching out toward the dog. All of those things can be used in a professional setting as well.
And I know even, I think this is one of the toughest things for me about COVID is, as humans, we are touchers. Everybody's different, but we are huggers. Or I think one of the things that bothers me sometimes is not seeing people smile, you know, and some of those kinds of reactions. And I think that with the dogs, it's really, you know, you can still hopefully touch the dog.
Right.
So far, I know that there have been a few dogs that they're may have gotten COVID, but I don't think that's as serious a problem as other things. Let's talk a little bit, and I think because I won't say this is one of my pet peeves, but it's a concern that I have, the difference between, and you and I have talked about this, the difference between a certified therapy dog and something we would call an emotional support animal, or, and we can all, and that you can talk about that certification process too, which isn't much of
it. It's non-existent.
Yes.
Basically, it's a real concern. It's a concern for the airlines. It's a concern for other people. It's a concern for restaurants. Primarily, a therapy animal is there to benefit many people. An emotional support animal is there to support an individual. And so is a service dog. It's there to support an individual. But there's a huge difference between a service dog and an emotional support dog. And the difference is that service dogs are highly trained to do specific skills. Emotional support dogs need no training. You can go online and get a certificate for $90. By law, an emotional support dog is, you're supposed to have a letter from a person who is working with you, either a primary caregiver or a therapist. And for some reason, usually a mental health reason, you need to have this dog present in your life. It helps with stress or anxiety or something like that. And then they can write you a letter stating this. But that is so misused because people will just go to a doctor and say, can you write me a letter?
And I've seen when I was doing some research and Googling some things on therapy dogs and service dogs, what always pops up are these online outfits that says, do you need an emotional support dog? Do you want to get free rides on the air? You know, your dog to get free ride on the airplane? We have veterinarians right here, you know, that you can talk to, you know, ask them four or five simple questions. And
and then you can buy a vest for $45.
Right. That's right. And the people that I talk to that are into dog training and into service dog training feels that this really kind of detracts, you know, all dogs tend to be looked at the same, and this really detracts from the dogs. Now, like Maya, Maya is 2 years old, just in October. Mm-hmm. And she's probably been trained since she was 4 months old.
She's trained since 9 weeks.
Yes. Yeah. So, you know, so she's, really highly trained, and she knows probably 50 commands by voice. And so I think that I think you mentioned some problems that you've seen with dogs that weren't highly trained, that supposedly were.
Both service animals and therapy animals are evaluated to be tolerant of a wide variety of environments. That's a huge difference. And they have an aptitude to do the work that they're trained to do. And then they're evaluated to see that they can do that work. An emotional support animal has none of that. You can have any kind of an animal. I was working at the airport and I had a flight attendant come up to me and she said, I was on a flight and an emotional support dog was in this guy's lap, jumped off the guy's lap, over into another guy's lap, bit him in the femoral artery, and they had to put the plane down.
Oh, wow.
I mean, you know, they're not trained. And if you talk to airline people, they have kind of horrific stories about this. But just in our general life, you know, a dog going into a restaurant that's not trained to be in a restaurant, and they might be barking, they might be lunging at other dogs, or it is a big concern.
You know, and for instance, one of the tests that I did yesterday with Maya, we went into a Burger King and bought an order of fries and knocked several of the fries off the table while Maya was under the table. And her response needs to be, she does not pick those up. She does not. Now, She looked at them very lustfully, but she did not pick them up.
And that's what we call a leave it command for our dogs. Right. And we have one of our testing things is to put something on the floor, because we don't want someone in a nursing home or a hospital, I mean, a dog, to run over and pick up a pill that's been dropped. So that leave it command is really important, just like for you.
Yeah, many of the, I mean, a common pill like warfarin that people take for blood thinning, mm-hmm. you know, a dog gets a couple of those and that's essentially is rat poison.
Yeah.
One last question that I have is to talk about is, you must really work with a therapy dog to make sure they have the right temperament. You touched on this a little earlier. Mm-hmm. But
first of all, you tell people, if you're working with the team, you know, are you sure that your dog has the temperament to do this? Do they love people? Are they okay with other animals? Are they okay in strange environments? You can test them to be okay in strange environments. But the temperament tests that we do are for things like a crowd of people being around them. Can they tolerate that? And then, of course, you're going to advocate for the dog. But can they test equipment like a walker or a wheelchair coming through? Are they going to freak out when they see that? How about loud noises in a space? Weird things in the environment, because they're going to be exposed to those kinds of things.
And that's one of the things that we test with too, mm-hmm. is with loud noises. Mm-hmm. And you run into things that sometimes you don't see. We were in a hardware store where they opened up this big galvanized door. And it really took Maya a while to calm down. That really mm-hmm. scared her. So mm-hmm. you have to get them in lots of different situations.
And that's your job, because the handler is supposed to, we call it pets,
right.
presence, which means proximity, eye contact, touch, and your tone of voice. All those things are used to work with the dog.
Yes, and I want you to know my dog is being very good right now under the table here.
She is. She's perfect.
And I think we will close out this session. Thank you for listening to us.
To stream this or any other episode of Is Abled with Dr. Stephen W. Nurse, go to voiceofashon.org and look under the Shows tab.